And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of the Glue Guys, we're going to look at the off season. We're going to look at the way that this team could improve because the season's
Mike,
over. Hey,
no, fire it up! Come on, only down three games to none. Mike, we got this. Let's get right into the show. Woo!
To the Glue Guys, this is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys. NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself by the paywall at TheAthletic.com/Glue Guys. A subsidiary of the New York Times. Brian. The Nets are gone.
I'm drinking deep from the glass, Mike. What a calamity. What an absolute calamity.
Tell me why it was a calamity, Brian.
You know what? You know what it is? You know, there was a moment. There was a moment in this game that I just want to zero in on, and it resonated deeply with me because it's the first time I've seen it ever in the last two or three years of this particular epoch of Nets basketball. And KD was trying to throw a lead pass to Kyrie coming off of a weird little two-man give-and-go action, and it farted out of bound, as so many of KD's passes have this series. And Kevin Durant spazzed out. He punched the air, and then he ran back on defense, and Kyrie was lagging behind him. And then he yelled at Kyrie Irving. Like, he yelled at Kyrie Irving. For the first time I've ever seen in their relationship, there was some level, just the beginnings, just this little baby bird of accountability, getting the first little worm. Mike, that's what happened. Because this entire season, this epoch of Nets basketball has been two guys who have just been in a state of suspended belief about you don't have to have a good regular season. You can throw things together. They have been huffing their own farts together, apologizing for each other, creating cloud cover. And now reality has hit. Now reality is accountability has come for you. And it was, you know, I was reminded of, you know, that documentary of like the two like schizotypal 13-year-old girls who like believe in Slender Man and then accidentally like stab one of their friends. It's like these two guys have had this like collective delusion that you can just do a basketball season like this and not have a fight, not hold each other accountable. And here it is. It hit them like a ton of bricks, and now we're down three games to the Boston Celtics. Max, we're going to get swept in the first round by the Celtics. Is everyone feeling that? Is everyone feeling that, Mike? I'm sorry. I'm going off. It is, what a calamity.
I would add a third person. To me, it's a troika of responsibility. Steve Nash. Here's the problem with Steve Nash. And this is the core, this is a core personality defect, okay? So Steve Nash is an amazing sort of EQ, like can read the room, can really like can negotiate difficult personalities in a really unique way, right? And we like to say that's what the modern coach has to be. That's what like is commonly referred to as, like, particularly in baseball, the modern coach, because we have analytics and we know all the numbers, we know the way you're supposed to play basketball, supposed to play baseball or football, whatever. The modern coach has to be able to handle personalities. He can handle personalities, but what often happens is this team has no clue most of the time what they're doing on offense. And they have two of the greatest offensive players in the history of basketball. But yet when they get to the offensive end of the floor, they have absolutely no idea. And it ends up being, if Bruce Brown wasn't a Brooklyn Net, if Sean Marks had not traded for Bruce Brown, this team would be getting blown out of every game.
It'd be unwatchable.
In this series.
He's the only
they
thing
they wouldn't
making...
even be in the playoffs, frankly, if they didn't have Bruce Brown.
Can I add Steve Nash to my Slenderman, like 13-year-old girl analogy?
Yes.
He's 4chan in this. He's the platform by which they allow
the
them.
The structure which has allowed this disgusting brand of basketball. So yeah, it was a close game, and I think the Nets had a higher level of intensity besides Kevin Durant. You know, Kyrie was really trying, like he was mixing it in there on rebounding. You know, he only got 3 rebounds, but he was very active near the basket. But it falls back to Steve Nash. Here's his personality defect, okay? And it actually ends up being his offensive system, which is he has faith that, oh, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, he is a person who has faith in other people. And he believes that because he is facing other people, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving will play basketball the right way and everything will flow beautifully. When the best coaches, what a system is a belief that the players won't do the right thing. So you create a system so that they end up doing the correct thing. That's what a system does. And he has no system. Andre Drummond, I did a live room on theathletic.com.
Shout out to the takes on this live room. I'm excited to hear.
I did it with the Anything Is Potable crew, which is the Celtics pod for our company. And Jay King, who actually covers the team, and Jam Packard, a professional sports fan that he is. Big Celtics people. One's a big fan. And I hilariously stated that the Nets would win in game 3 and that Andre Drummond would go for 20-10. And that would be the reason why. He went for 2 and 3, and he only has 1 turnover to his name, but he should be attributed for 5 turnovers because he volleyballed the ball to the Celtics What is going on with this team? Everyone is crumbling.
Who gave him the right?
Besides Blake Griffin, and I'll get to Blake Griffin in a second, but like Kevin Durant screamed at Patty Mills because Patty Mills brought his defender over to Kevin Durant. Really what we should talk about here is ultimately Kevin Durant. I mean, there's so much to discuss, but like, I have never seen a guy who is this sort of veteran and this great be as mentally effed up as he is. He is scared. He is afraid to dribble the ball. It's why, like, ultimately, everyone knows what the Celtics are going to do. They're going to take away the airspace. That's what they like to say in coach speak. They're going to take away Kevin Durant's airspace. They're going to send 2 bodies at him. You know what's a really easy way to attack when a guy is super close to you? It's to dribble the basketball around them because they are so close to you. Any move you make should be much quicker and faster than they're able to recover. That's the risk that the Celtics defense is playing. Kevin Durant has no faith in his handle right now. He had 8 assists. And typically when we think of assists, that means you must be a good ball handler. He got those 8 assists because Bruce Brown bailed him out on every single instance. I don't know.
I mean, it's infectious. You know, the sloppiness is infectious.
we kind of did this like vibes pod after game 2. And I was like, you know, they'll probably win game 3 and we'll be able to come here and be so excited that Ben Simmons is going to come back for game 4. And by the way, we have a ton of email. And it's fantastic that so many people, this is the most amount of email we've ever gotten on the show, sort of in a quick period of time.
Oh my God.
We have about a dozen emails within 4 minutes, a span of time. And we'll get to them. I think we owe it. It's part of our duty to kind of plow through some of them. But this is about as shocking and eye-opening as a series possible. There are excuses for why the Nets suck, but they suck, okay? Even though there are factors, they suck. Oh, Ben Simmons is going to come back in game 4. Who cares, Brian? Who cares?
I don't think he should come back for game 4 with this scenario. This is not a good this is a bad idea to send him into this
blue
wood guy's chipper.
Theater. You be Ben Simmons. I'll be his advisor. Hey Ben. I don't know if I think you should.
Let's start with a tabula rasa.
Let's have
Benny.
A back pain flare up. Okay? Your L4 disc is slipping again.
Yeah, maybe just ride that into the a pina colada.
It's so ridiculous.
Next week.
The guy like scrimmaged all week, and yet he can't play in a essentially a do or die game. But yet 2 days later, you know, a scant 36 hours, 48 hours later, that's going to be the difference. Like, you know, anyways, this team, they played harder. Great. Celtics are very good. The Celtics are a deserved 2 seed. Yeah. Jason Tatum ends up with 39 points because of the way it ended, but he actually didn't play all that well, ultimately throughout the entirety of the game. There wasn't a freakish game from really anyone else. Jaylen Brown was very effective when Blake Griffin was guarding him, which I do want to point out. Peyton Pritchard had that little spurt in the second quarter, but no one else really played all that great. Horford got 3 points. Tice got 9. Marcus Smart was 14. He went 6 for 15 from the field, 2 for 10 from three. But the Nets lost this game because Kevin Durant, who should be the best player in the NBA, his mind is in a blender. We talk about blenders. His mind is in a blender. He is done. What do you want to talk about, Brian? Do you want to get to email, or
let's go emails. Going? I mean, I had my intro rant. You know, we talked about 4chan, Slenderman, and it was a zinger. So what, do you want to go right to a break, or just right into the emails?
Let's just go right into emails. Yeah.
All right. First up, cheer boy. That's Ryan. It's just Ryan. Just Ryan. Ryan says, simple question, guys. How do you fix this team for next season? And yes, absolutely including the coaching staff, which is a debacle. Also, why do you think Steve Nash just refuses to make changes or adjustments? This game is the same damn thing as game one, just some half-assed zone sprinkled in. Surely, if everyone on the internet is pointing out what needs to change, he must hear it, right? Is this just stubbornness? I know for a fact Steve Nash does not have he doesn't have a browser installed. He's got no access to my phone. Just picked up that it's going crazy. He is not on the internet. The man is not hearing you. He's not hearing us. You have to say it to his face. That's how Steve Nash operates.
I like that Ryan, I think he accidentally spelled Steve Nash, yeah, Steve Mash. Mash. And that's very accurate, because all Steve Nash does is mash buttons as a coach. Nice. There's no strategy. Nice. He's just a button masher.
That's right. You know? That's right.
Just going up there for Street Fighter. Doesn't know how to create the Aryukin. He just...
If he does it, it's by accident. Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely by accident. Yeah. He has no way to figure out how he got the Aryukin.
No, you know what it is? He plays, first of all, he plays Mortal Kombat, okay, which is, by all estimations, the lesser, you know, fighting game of if we're going straight. Okay. Yeah, but and he plays Liu Kang.
It took you as a Mortal Kombat man.
No. I've got discerning taste, Mike, and you know that. So, and he's figured out the one like Liu Kang thing where it's forward. Everyone knows a Hadouken is down forward B, and they went forward. A, you know, it's you know, that's the difference, and he's spamming that, and everybody knows it. But anyways, that's stupid,
dude. The one good thing that will come out of this series is that Steve Nash will be fired. We've been here before. There's enough evidence to know that he's not a good enough coach for this team. He's not the right coach for this team. He is maybe a very nice guy, and I understand why Sean Marks made the hire. It's why a lot of guys like Steve Nash, Derek Fisher, Jason Kidd, people like that, they get hired post-playing career. Because as players, they're very smart players. They understand everything that's happening on the floor. Chris Paul will be the same. If Chris Paul wants to be a head coach when he retires, he will become a head coach. He probably won't be very good at it because it is a different job. Right, it's a completely different job. Just because you understand the game when you were on the court and you were considered a coach on the floor does not mean you know how to call a timeout, does not mean you know how to set rotations, does not mean you know how to set up an offensive system just because you know how to operate in one at an excellent level. Steve Nash is a not good coach. Not good. He may be a sweetheart of a man, and he's in TikToks with his daughter. I absolutely love him for it. He's not the right coach for this team. There is no offensive system. Their defense isn't any good. Now, that's maybe personnel, and I understand that. But he is responsible for all of these factors. And this team is like, yeah, it was a close game. So, you know, we could be in the game one that was close. Game one was a coaching failure and was a coaching win for Ime. Ime was on the bench. You know, it's funny to think about. We keep bemoaning the loss of Mike D'Antoni as an assistant coach. Maybe Ime Udoka is like really actually the guy we should be bemoaning because he has his team so locked in that even when they're not playing that well, like the Celtics had dumb turnovers tonight. Even when they're not playing well, and it felt like the refs were like trying to help the Nets on some level, it doesn't matter because the team is better coached. Yes, Brian.
I'll add, just by virtue of this like unignorable reality check, I mean, like, this is truly where all of our bullshit just had to like come to a screeching halt in a lot of ways, just in the wake of this series. To get swept in the first round with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving on your team is it's alarming, right? It should be, it'd be like, oh my gosh, the both of those guys should take that as like a sign of their basketball mortality. Like, you know, like that's being impinged upon, you know? And I think just by virtue of this reality check, they'll be better next season because like they will have to assume some level of responsibility and a modicum of actual leadership. Like we were talking in the stream tonight, you know, Kyrie Irving, everyone says, you know, they love him. They like him a lot. Everyone's very much, they like him. But here's the evidence is like people don't line up to play with him. You know, I get a lot of friends, you know, do I want to work with them? No, not especially, you know, not all the time, sometimes, but like, just because you show up to my birthday party doesn't mean I think we're going to go roll out and, you know, take over the world
start
together.
A SPAC. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, he's great at showing up to people's birthday parties. And what he needs to do now is actually show some real leadership because he's getting paid a lot and he's a person for whom takes up like a massive part of our cap table and is presumably supposed to be leading this team and more and not just being, you know, a sort of spiritual guide, but an actual on-court practitioner of leadership qualities. I would like to see that from him. I think KD has taken a back seat on that for a while, and I would like to see the two of them actually collectively come together and begin to foment something more than just them. Can you remember a single time in the series where either one of them had a play, like they played off of each other in some compelling dynamic way? I can't think of a single give and go play between those two guys that actually like sticks out in my memory. Is there
no.
one?
Well, no, I mean, yeah. But ultimately that, so there are reasons for that, right? It's like the injuries and they've, how many games have they actually played together? But it's also like Steve Nash, there's no plan for them to operate together. What's very interesting to me is that how they try to solve for the Kevin Durant being, you know, doubled or having a lack of airspace was giving it quickly to Bruce Brown because the Celtics are completely, you know, they're giving Bruce Brown a lot of airspace. You know, the amount of airspace that must be over Russia, right? Because Russia is a very big country. And so Steve Nash's plan, and Bruce Brown had an amazing game, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. And he at so many times, like when the Nets needed something, he gave it to them. But the game plan was, here's Kevin Durant, we're going to give him the ball, and then Kevin's going to find Bruce Brown, and then Bruce is going to put up a floater or pass it out to someone else. Why is it impossible to make it so that Kyrie is actually the recipient of that pass from Kevin Durant? Now, I know that Kyrie has like Marcus Smart on him and a better defender than Bruce Brown does. I'm just saying, like, you are right. Kevin Durant, Kyrie, they need to be such better leaders. Like, it's so insane. You brought this up in the last episode. I'm so glad you did. And many people responded to it about whose fault is this season. It is Kyrie Irving's. It is his anti-vax stance is why James Harden left town, not because James Harden was like so pro-vaccine. It's just that he was
Harden's
playing
a mercenary, and he's like, I'm off to greener pastures. You can't blame a mercenary for being a mercenary. That's what they do.
And I would be kind of terrified if this team was led by Harden, Kyrie, and KD, as what I've seen from KD in this series and Harden in Philly. But I think if Harden's on this team, it's better than not having any – like they don't have – like Seth Curry really hasn't done much. Drummond hasn't done anything in this series.
He's playing volleyball. He's playing a different sport out there. That's what.
And
he's,
Ben Simmons is simply on a fashion show,
and he's crushing that. He looks great.
And he's scrimmaging. He's one of the greatest scrimmage players in the history of NBA playoffs.
Here's the way I would say this: like, and this is maybe like the big existential question, and I don't want to like rehash the history because we're getting flooded with emails right now, and we're getting stuck on this one. You know,
we should pound.
But here's the existential thought that I want to just like go over quickly, and we don't even have to chop it up, but like, is it worth it to pay James Harden that 5-year contract, whatever egregious sum that would have been, to be hyper competitive in this very window, this 2-year window right now, if Kyrie's playing and the whole team is together playing a whole regular season? Had that been our alternate simulation universe, whatever, do we take that 2-year window? Because I think everyone agrees that Harden is on a precipitous decline. He's begun his decline. That being said, he would still be the third best player, maybe second best player on this team, and is the sort of, you know, the meniscus that ties the ligament and the bone together here, because those two parts do not, they are not working together. They're not better than some of their parts. So anyways, is it worth it to take to bite the bullet on the last like 3 years to win championships now? I leave it to you. That's not, it's a rhetorical question. It's for the gods to know, Mike, ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious that this team it's so ridiculous to say they're lacking something, cause they do have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but they play the least analytically friendly style of basketball. The Nets do. I mean, they've been, there's like that jarring stat of like the Nets shot profile is the worst in the NBA playoffs by like a mile, and the Celtics are like the second best. The Nets just put themselves in this, because they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving who specialize in the mid-range, and neither of them are guys who go to the bucket looking to get fouled, and Kevin Durant's completely forgotten how to dribble the basketball. They have to be perfect to win against a team like the Celtics. Here, before we get to the emails, Steve Nash says something post-game, which I understand it's post-game conversation, and he's not going to give away his secrets, though. How many secrets does he really have at this point? He's like Mr. Bean of basketball coaches. But this is from Chris from SB Nation, or from Nets Daily. Friend, well, he has been on the show, but he's a friend of the show. This is what he said. This is what Steve Nash said. Steve Nash on what it's going to take to become the first team to come back from 3-0. Just character. It's about our character. It's about digging deep and having pride. I said this before. This is the Steve Nash problem, man. He believes that just by the Nets' talent, they just have to play better. Like, he thinks, because it's probably true. Like, of course, if they play better, they play with more pride, and they do dig deep, they will play better and maybe they will win a game. It takes an awful lot more than that, though. Like, it takes a whole system and a plan and a way to attack the team. And ultimately, the Nets are always reactionary to what the other teams are doing to them. And they never sort of have a competitive mental advantage via coaching going into a game. They've never had it under Steve Nash. You and I have always been nice about Steve Nash, okay? And I've been defending him because of his personality, and I think a lot of other coaches would have gone nuclear during the Kyrie thing. But it is so clear that the guy just doesn't, like, you kind of need the personality of like a Jeff Van Gundy, which is you believe that you have to like scrap and claw, and you have to think about every little thing in the world. A lot of guys have it in the NBA as coaches. The best ones do. He just doesn't have that. He doesn't think about every little thing that would give him an advantage. He thinks, we have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, we should be fine. So what a great show.
Next all up.
Right, next up, Cheerboy.
Cheerboy. That's Bilge Ebiri. Friend of the show, Bill Gabiri. This is piggybacking off of what we were talking about, and this is a different, like, an interesting kind of perspective on it. I know everyone will blame this team's woes on Steve Nash, but is it possible that our stars are basically uncoachable I mean, here are two guys who left well-coached championship teams on which they'd won finals MVP trophies because why exactly? In 2018-2019 under Kenny Atkinson, the Nets were actually one of the best coached teams in the league. Expert at running plays out of timeouts and to close quarters. Once Kyrie arrived, suddenly a Kenny Atkinson coached team stopped running plays. Nash probably isn't a good coach to begin with, but really, he wasn't hired to coach. He was hired to manage superstar egos, and he's actually done that pretty well. If the Nets want a real coach, they might have to do more than just hire one. They might have to figure out a way to convince Kyrie and KD that they might have to consent to being coached. That they have to do more than just hoop. That's a good email, Bill. Again, you know, we've should have expected it. Honestly, I should have expected a good email from you. So, Mike, is this by design? You know, have we just been so happy and thankful that KD and Kyrie just showed up on our doorstep? Like, you know, the stork dropped off these beautiful baby boys, you know, just out of the sky. And this franchise felt so, you know, just it was our cup runneth over with star talent all of a sudden that we just rushed to placate them and make sure that they felt, you know, accounted for in all regards and didn't actually hold their feet to the fire and practiced a little bit of the accountability they were talking about. And are we able to actually do that? Is it now too late, too little too late? Are we going to be able to like wrest the narrative back from these two guys who are ostensibly leading this team and actually build some kind of system in place? Mike, I ask you, I'm asking you, Mike.
Well, this gets to my favorite potential topic of conversation, which I will be discussing continually on this show in the offseason, which will probably be becoming on Monday night or whenever game five is, because the Nets are done. They're toast. They're going to fire Steve Nash because there's no way that you get through this, what just happened in this series, and not fire Steve Nash. So who's the next coach? And I floated out with a lot of backing. You can listen to the episode, but I'll give it briefly here. Coach Mike Krzyzewski, recently retired coach Mike Krzyzewski. The Reader's Digest version is essentially that he's retired. He showed up in Boston to watch the game. He coached Kyrie. He coached KD in Team USA. And there's only a select group of coaches that you could hire for this position who Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are going to listen to. Because ultimately, if you bring in anyone else below this certain line, and the line is basically Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich, and Mike Krzyzewski, maybe it's Doc Rivers if Doc Rivers for some reason gets fired in Philly, though like I would feel real cautious about Doc Rivers sort of being the answer here in Brooklyn. Particularly because Ben Simmons plays for this basketball team now. I don't know if everyone remembers that. He apparently does play.
Yeah.
But like Pop isn't going anywhere. Phil Jackson's not coming back to coach. And so, you know, Coach K is literally like the only guy I think that Kyrie and KD would like really listen to and be coached. Like we talk about that. Bilga has, that's a fantastic viewpoint. And it's almost like it's the question of like, can the Nets as an organization sort of force Kevin Durant and Kyrie to be coached? Like all coaching, they have to accept coaching, right? And I don't think that they're not accepting coaching. They're both extremely intelligent. They know way more about basketball than I do. But how could they be happy with how this thing is turning out? Like how could they be happy with running in an offense where Kevin Durant just has two dudes clinging to the back of his jersey, and when he looks around for help, basically everyone's just standing there waiting for Kevin to put up an awful shot? Like how could those guys who, as Bill references, you know, want to play for the Warriors in the most beautiful basketball system we've seen in since Nash's sons and Kyrie, who played with, you know, LeBron James, how could they be happy with what's happening to them? And that's what surprises me most about game three, is that I expected Kevin Durant, one of the baddest MFers on the planet, to do what he's done in his career, which is come out and scorch earth to be, I saw this movie today, to be like Alexander Skarsgård in The Northman, a film that I saw today.
Thumbs up? Two thumbs up?
Yeah, it was okay. Not that good. But, you know, that guy, he was mad. He was a mad guy, and he did what he wanted to do.
Spoiler alert.
No spoilers. But That's what's so isn't that shocking to you that Kevin Durant couldn't get, like, he was so shell-shocked and so resigned to the fact that he couldn't, like, he just couldn't put up open jumpers that it almost makes me doubt, like, what, like, so, okay, wait, who's Kevin Durant? Like, wow. If I went back 3 weeks ago, I was like, Kevin Durant's the best player in the NBA. There's no question I would take him over anyone, over Giannis, over Jokic, over Luka. But, right, like, dude, this so doesn't funny. Happen to Giannis. This doesn't happen to Jokic, and this doesn't happen to Luka.
It's so funny to think about what was going on at that time, too, is KD and Kyrie just taking turns, like, dropping 50 and 60, and they're just like, yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah.
They're like, we're the dopest. Why wouldn't we just, like, steamroll in the playoffs? There's, like, it is, now that I think about it, there is some, like, while it's they're huffing their own farts, those are like some sweet tasting farts. Like, they were like putting up some really big games. And I get it. Like, it's easy to like cut talk yourself into some stuff when you're playing that well. But we should move along. We should keep the emails.
Quick break coming back. Emails coming back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. Who's up, Brian?
This is Chuggirl DJ. DJ. That's DJ. Hey guys, this is your girl DJ reaching out from the sunken place. We are all there. DJ, good to be here with you. Worst thing about this game is that there is another one on Monday, and I will lose my mind if Ben steps foot on that court. Do you think Brooklyn is ridiculous enough to play him? And really, what's next? Love the pod, DJ. Love you, DJ. Thank you for the email.
Brian, what do you think?
I gotta tell you, they are ridiculous enough to do it. I'm like 75% sure they don't, because that's just such a goofball. Like he's like the idea that he couldn't play today, but everything's going to be better by Monday is just it would be too ridiculous. And that's a perfect choice of words. So I'm going to say more than likely no, but like, holy heck, is this a weird team? And stranger things have happened. I don't know. What's your feeling, Mike?
I'm just reading quotes coming out of the Nets locker room.
Oh, yeah?
And here's one. Kyrie, this is from Christian Winfield. Kyrie said, you can put it on me for doing more and holding guys accountable, which I'm guessing is saying, like, you could put it on me for not holding guys accountable. It's just so frustrating. Kyrie, I don't want to be cliche, but I don't know how you make up time from October. I don't know, man. Get fucking vaccinated, dude. Sorry. Like, yeah. How can you say that?
Yeah.
You're the guy. Yeah. You're the guy who chose not to be here.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I know it's a choice, and I respect everyone's choice, but you chose also not to be here. I think they're going to put Ben Simmons out there to sell tickets, because that arena on Monday is going to be filled with Celtics fans.
You think so? And, wow, that's a cynical take. That's a super cynical take.
So here's the thing. And I'm going to defend Nets fans on this one. So, people like Nick Friedel from ESPN, who's covering this team but seems to hate the team on some level. He really hates the fan base, which is odd if you cover the team. Like, I don't know. Anyways, he was like, oh, there's so many Celtics fans here. And Mike Breen referenced that there are Celtics fans, and we know that there are Celtics fans, which, again, I don't know if people know this. New York City is kind of an international city, and they pull in a lot of people from a lot of different places. It's not unusual that away fans are in an arena in New York City. Like, sure, I know that the Garden wouldn't be like a lot of Celtics fans, but it's just different in Brooklyn.
Yeah, there would be. Specifically from Boston, because nobody wants to live in Boston. So it makes
Boston's
a ton of sense.
A backwater town.
Yeah, Boston sucks.
An absolute backwater town.
I've never actually been to Boston, and I hope to never
It's actually brilliant. I really like it. Ugh. It's a nice town. A lot of great schools, great public
Next
schools.
Up.
Anyways, no, real quick. Oh. Ben Simmons, does he change the series for you? What if he did? What if, like, he comes in and he's like 20, 10, and 10, baby, and in 20 minutes of playtime, and he is electric, and he's hitting threes because Kyle Korver's taught him how to shoot threes. What would you feel?
Man. And what if, like, monkeys fly out of my butt, you know? Like, it's you're right. That it would be crazy, man. That would be wild.
Could happen, dude. I hope he posts something on social media of, like, here I come. You know, he posts a picture of his shoes and, you know, that he tries to build up the excitement.
Mm.
God bless you, Ben. Like, honestly, if you play in game four, good on you for doing that.
Honestly, it's like, I mean, the amount of deep sadness that was in the Nets Nation in the Dirty Stream tonight. I kind of believe with what you're saying a little bit, just because, like, a lot of people are like, I'm just switching to baseball. It's baseball season. Like, I'm not even tuning in to game four. And then Ben Simmons gives you a reason to do it. So maybe that's the cynical media coastal elite driven argument for it. I think it works. Next up, cheer boy. That's Jeremy Reagan. AKA Wicked Skinny. Shout out to wickedskinny.com. Check it out, everybody. Cool stuff. You know, puts it in the signature. Says, hey guys, how much does this poor showing in the playoffs affect Marks' job in retooling this roster? Interesting question. With guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake, Patty, and Gordon choosing the Nets and then not seeing much action in the series, do free agents decide to go elsewhere next year? Much love, Wicked Skinny. Great question. And it is true that, like, with some, I mean, you know, Blake Griffin had a weird moment tonight. It was almost going to be the Blake Griffin game. We were really holding out hope that that
pretty exciting
that
for
that
a moment.
Could be the thing.
Can I just point out something?
Yeah.
Not to burst the, I don't want to break Cinderella's glass slippers here.
Yeah.
As exciting as that was, you know, him hitting those two threes, the Celtics took such advantage of him on when Blake was on defense. That, like, every bucket that Blake scored, the Celtics were scoring on the other end with Jaylen Brown. So, like as great, as exciting as it was to see Blake Griffin. And it's so funny how they were talking about how exhausted he was.
Mm.
Like, did you listen to the ABC?
I didn't.
They were like, he is exhausted. He hasn't played in 3 weeks. I'm like, shouldn't he feel fresh as a daisy?
That's not how it works. If I don't exercise in 10 years the way that I haven't, do you think I'm just going to be fresh?
Why isn't he exercising?
Just
because he's outside basketball doesn't mean he's...
I'm talking about me. This is the Donald Trump sort of logic of, you know, you have a finite amount of energy. Exercise wastes your energy.
What he believes?
That's what he authentically believes. That's a real take.
I know you pattern your life after the 45th president.
Hey,
so.
he got to the top office, Mike. He's doing something right. Back to the question. So Sean Marks' job, Mike, is it easier or harder? What waiver wire vet can we get out of the bargain bin next year?
We'll do all this, like, but big picture, like, we'll do all that obviously in the offseason, which is going to start in like 5 days. But big picture, so, like, I think LaMarcus is probably done playing basketball. I think Blake's basically done unless he...
What? Blake's like 32. How old is Blake? He's
33. They said a lot tonight, 33 years old. But, like,
he's going to play.
Maybe. Goran's not done, but I think he's a year away from being done. He'll probably then go to Dallas, where he always wanted to be. Patty has an interesting choice. Patty Mills is the taxpayer mid-level exception. He did a one-on-one contract, so he signed for this year, and then he's a player option for next year. Honestly, I got to think that he leaves this team. Because I think he can still get the same amount of money somewhere else. And why would you want to be on this team right now? You know, like you have no idea, unless if he really loves Ben Simmons so much. The Aussie connection, and it seems like Patty Mills' wife and Ben Simmons' fiance are like really close. You know, there's worse places to be than in Brooklyn chilling with your Aussie friends. I get it. But it doesn't seem like he's having much fun, and he's not really enjoying the role that he's on in this team. Kevin Durant screamed at him tonight. Anyways, yeah, so it's going to make it harder. And like the sort of that the Goran, all those guys that we just listed, those are all a product of the people believing this team was going to win a championship and like win multiple championships. It's going to be way hard to get those buyout guys if this team gets swept in the first round of the playoffs. And people are players like that, like LaMarcus, are doubting, wait, is this the team that I can win a championship on? Like, why would I go there if I can't? Like, I would just go to Phoenix now. Like, why wouldn't you not just chill in Scottsdale, play golf, and hit threes? That's what I would do.
Next up, cheer boy. That's Sam Abela. So Nash seems to be getting all the blame, and I agree. He cannot be there next year. Been getting outcoached ever since Ime and D'Antoni left. He uses funny names there. The bench, but there are many others who deserve blame here. Kevin Durant picked Nash. Okay, he didn't know it would be this bad.
I'm going to go to the bathroom while you do this.
But he also pushed for the Harden trade, lost all our picks, and with that, a massive ability to improve our roster and go and get team-specific needs. And Allen, who quickly turned into an all-star. Then there's Kyrie, and look, I am his biggest fan off the court. And no, he does great things off of it, but you can argue he has been a constant distraction. And lastly, Sean Marks. He has built a team that struggles to go 7 deep in the playoffs. No wings apart from KD. No stretch big who can play. Lack of ball handlers and creators. Sorry, this was long but needed to rant. Sam, thank you. I'm going to field this by myself here. And I think you raise an interesting point. I really do, because, you know, the construction of the roster has not really been scrutinized really that much. Mike, you're back. You can go. What do you have to do?
I just had to go to the bathroom. So, that's all.
So basically the part of this that I'm keying into, Mike, is,
yes.
Do we blame Marks for the overall roster construction? Are we not scrutinizing the fact that we have a lot of sort of combo guards, a lot of utility bigs, and then these two star players? And is this disconnected feeling that we're all sensing so acutely more a product of personnel decisions than, you know, coaching on some level? Has Nash been given the right ingredients? And I'm laughing a little bit because, like, he hasn't done his job near enough to the point where I can, you know, take that seriously on his face. But, like, there is some, you know, criticism to levy here.
Oh, sure.
Because we do have a weirdly constructed team. Like, Patty Mills and Goran Dragic as supplementary combo guards on paper look great. That feels like a good fit. Like, the people that would spell Kyrie, who is, again, a guy at the time when we got him, by no means a sure bet to play, let's be honest. And then, you know, KD is so unique that it's just like impossible to kind of like recreate whatever he does. But, you know, I think that there's arguments there to be like, we didn't have the sort of like rounded players like Jeff Green that we did last year. We like surely missed and things like that. And like Blake Griffin had descended further than we could have expected, you know, but maybe not. Like, people were kind of clamoring for Blake Griffin to play more minutes towards the end of the season. We're just sort of like, why are we banishing him and LaMarcus to the bench? And it does feel like, you know, it's hard to say really ultimately like what's happened here, because I just feel like, I think there's so much.
Well, it's clear what's happened.
I mean, it's clear what's happened results wise, but like it is. What?
Go ahead. Like, what led to, I mean, like, so, there are the excuses, right, which are very true. It's like this team has been injury / anti-vax riddled, so it's led to no consistency. The anti-vax stance by Kyrie led to James Harden wanting to leave because he was like, who the hell am I playing with? Then they make the trade, and yeah, Drummond was good, and now this series he's like completely ineffective. Seth Curry was good, but his ankle's definitely bothering. Like, that's another thing that confuses me, is that, you know, they're having Kevin Durant again pass the ball to Bruce Brown to make a play. Why isn't Seth Curry operating that spot? Because Curry can much more reliably hit the three. Anyways, the guy in the Harden trade that was supposed to, you know, push you over the top is Ben Simmons, who they thought was going to play a month ago, and he is scrimmage. He's the ultimate scrimmage player, all NBA scrimmage. And all of that is creating a cocktail around a coach who doesn't, a cauldron, if you will, who doesn't have a system, doesn't seem very interested in having a system, doesn't really seem interested in game planning, is a reactionary coach rather than a sort of we're going to do our thing on you coach, who we're going to make you feel uncomfortable. It's just him trying to figure out how, you know, what, how they deal with it all. All of that mixes together. And like, this question goes back to Sean Marks. Of course, Sean Marks deserves some blame, but like, you know, ultimately, what's the other piece that they could have had? So in the offseason, I was hot for Otto Porter.
You were all horned up for him.
And Otto Porter's good. And Otto Porter's like the exact type of player that they could really use, which is like a wing with some size, who can shoot threes and move the ball. They had Jeff Green. If they had Jeff Green on this team, they would have won at least one of these games. Because the one thing Blake Griffin gave them was like a big who could shoot threes, and they really could use a big who could shoot threes. Sean Marks deserves some blame. This roster could be better constructed, I guess. But ultimately, you know, when you get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and then you trade for James Harden, which I think a trade you make 1,000 times out of 1,000, you sap your bench. And I think he's done a pretty good job of pulling together. Like, he got Bruce Brown, and he traded for Bruce Brown. He ended up getting a decent amount of pieces for Harden in an awful situation. He convinced Patty Mills to come to Brooklyn. And even though Patty's been a disappointment of late, you know, he's a guy, and Goran's here, and Goran's good. He drafted Nick Claxton. Like, he's done a decent enough job. I do think this roster is flawed, and they're going to have to really, like they're probably going to have to trade Joe Harris to fix it. But that's, I don't really want to get into the trading Joe Harris discussion now. We're still in playoff mode, baby.
Next up, and maybe finally, I don't know what time we got. Next up, cheer boy, that's David Anderson. Mr. Anderson. Nice. I thought this was a good one. He says, guys, appreciate the pod now more than ever. So tell me if this is the correct order of the list of reasons the Nets are so much worse than last year. Number one, they can't pass the ball. Simple entry passes, including inbounds. Two, can't get easy buckets. They miss Harden, including transition. Three, they don't have much size. Too many times Bruce Brown at the four would have been the shortest Celtic on the floor. Four, Nash is coaching without his two smartest assistants from 2021, Celtics head coach and D'Antoni. Five, selective boxing out. Six, basic basketball IQ, i.e. shot clock awareness, O and D. Not saving the ball under the hoop, ensuring someone's there to inbound or receive an inbounds, random rebound, tipping the ball, etc. Main rant, every time in transition, they should be looking for Durant on the run to get him the ball for a stop and pop, but no one understands leverage or angles. The Warriors scored a bazillion points with Durant in that fashion because either a big guy is on him who can't stay with him on the move toward the hoop, or a small guy is on him and can't contest the jumper. Get a real point guard, Mike Conley type. Now I see why Miami is infinitely better with Lowry than Dragic the last 2 years. That's a good email, Mike. That's a good email. And, you know, he really, like, this goes back into, you know, what's the cause of the problems? And something, the first number one problem was they can't pass is, it's, like, really a thing that, like, truly pops off the page. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's like timing on a pin down, right? Like, these guys are trying to do a basic V cut to get the ball to an open player, and they can't time this right because they've played, all in all, 5 seconds together, and they don't have a good sense of pacing and of what their identity is, and it's that, like, those types of moments where they just can't even get free for a very basic, like, V cut entry pass is truly, and David Anderson brings up a great point. It's like, that's why it's the most frustrating team we've seen in a while. Like, the very basic things like that, where they can't pull off.
Again, it can all be attributed to the fact that this team has barely played together, and they're playing against a team that is, you know, like in the Celtics, if you had to rank the teams that have sort of the sort of the mojo going, just like everyone's operating out of the same brain. The Celtics are right up there with the Suns and Bucks and all that stuff. And the Nets are the complete opposite. So maybe we should have seen this series coming because it has been close. And what happens in close series is the team that actually knows how to play together is the one that wins. I thought going into the series that Kevin Durant would be the difference because he's should be the best player.
Me too.
And he isn't. Yeah, I think everything that Mr. Anderson laid out here was like perfect, 100% on point. The team does need a real point guard, which is, that's actually going to be a very hard thing for them to obtain. Again, unless they trade Joe Harris. The funny thing is, hey, Ben Simmons, baby. Kind of a real point guard, right?
Yeah, like, a little bit. Yeah, we got something there.
He should help.
Let's wrap that into this. Let's do something. Yeah, please.
If they win game four and Ben Simmons looks really good, let's say he looks good, okay? And they win game four.
Don't do this to yourself, Mike.
Brian, listen to me.
Love it, but don't.
How would that make you? Would it give you a glimmer?
No.
No. It would give. I'm going to be honest with you. It would give me a glimmer. There'd be a glimmer there. Just because I'm that dumb.
I mean, I love it for you. I'm not going to get baited. I'm not going to do it. It's not going to happen.
Here's
what it will be at me, though, because, you know, and to end on a high note, because, you know, the season's not over, but looking ahead, I do think that connective tissue might very well be on the team already in Ben Simmons, and a lot of these problems, it's very possible, maybe even likely, they sort themselves out with the personnel that we already have in terms of our top leadership positions, the big three. It's possible that they really do jive together. I'm optimistic about that part of it, but not right now, unfortunately. Not just this moment. But Mike, we've gone 50 minutes now, and this has been a long night. We've had a lot of it's been a roller coaster of emotions, to be honest with you. And I want to give you a lot of credit for being strong, you know, and a pillar in these difficult times. But I do think that we should, you know, think about asking people for 5 stars because we do want them and we do need them despite all of this. And we would want them to follow us on Twitter at BK Glue Guys. We would want them to join our Discord where we do all kinds of fun interactive things at discord.gg/glueguys. And of course, get behind the paywall at theathletic.com/glueguys.
Can I add one thing?
Please.
Matt Brooks has a quote from Kyrie Irving. Mm. Kyrie Irving says the Celtics have been gelling since Christmas and the Nets are in a new experience as a group and we just have to respect that. Kyrie adds he doesn't know how you make up for that time that the Nets lost. Brian, dude, you know, things, you know,
I know how.
Life is bigger than basketball, right? Like our outside selves are more important than ourselves on the court. And I respect that. I agree with that. Kyrie, I support you when you want to flick off the fans in Boston because they were pricing some heinous stuff to you. And you are human. And there's no reason why you have to sort of take that level of abuse without even, you know, communicating your displeasure for that level of abuse. But, dude... You made a very clear decision, a decision that is a minority decision, a decision that a small group of people, particularly in this area of the country, in the, you know, the Acela corridor, you have made a decision to not be with your team. The team didn't make a decision to push you away. Yeah, you weren't allowed to play road games. They'd made that decision. But you were never going to play home games if you didn't get blah, blah, blah. And we pored over local ordinances for weeks for you, man. For weeks.
Months. Let's call it what it was. It was months.
Brian and I was working sources to try to figure out whether you'd play basketball. And you come back and play basketball. And he's just being honest. Like, in this answer to this question, he's being honest. And, you know, I can't fault him for that. But... it's also like you made the decision not to get vaccinated. So this season is a complete bust because of that. And let's say Ben Simmons never returns to who he was, and the Nets traded James Harden. Let's say James Harden's back to doing, you know, 25, 10, and 10, like he actually still does, even though he's diminished himself. You know, I want us to properly rate this vaccine decision in the grand scheme of the Nets' history. Yeah. And if this team doesn't come back with a championship edge to them, you know, part of my problem, I know we're about to wrap up the pod, but part of my problem with what I've seen out of Kevin Durant and Kyrie since they've come to Brooklyn is it feels like they are early retirees in a golf community where, yeah, sure, maybe they're checking in on their work email. Maybe they're like part-time workers. You know, they sort of do some contract work for their
advisory,
old company.
A lot of advisory boards. That's what they're
doing. You know, they'll come in. They'll glad hand you sort of the old sales people, you know, the ad people will kind of come in and
throw me on the deck. I'll be part of the advisory board. Put me on the deck.
Just put me on the emails. Yeah. So they'll know, but they're not digging deep into the power, you know, the PowerPoints, you know, they're not looking at the data. They're not waking up at 5:30 AM to look at what's happening with the Nikkei. You know, no, they're not checking the European markets. No. They're looking at what CNBC says at their lunch break. Mm. So a lot of this, and Kevin Durant said this before the end of the season about how basically like this season, yeah, hasn't been that great, but we're looking long term. And we had declared that as a great thing that he has that perspective. And I think it's a true thought. But also, it'd be nice if they'd want to win a basketball at some point. Like, it'd be great if at some point since June 30th, 2019, if we as a fan base could wrap our arms around this team and feel like that they want the thing that we want. I'm almost done, but here's one last thing. People like to shit on Nets fans because we're not passionate enough, right? Like, oh, the Celtics fans invade the arena. Oh, the Warriors fans invade the arena. How, as fans, are we supposed to build an emotional connection to this team of mercenaries that ultimately doesn't seem to really care about winning? I'm not, you know, I know that they want to win, but like, there's a lack of like, of energy surrounding this team, a drive, a dedication. Everything is discussed around this team, whether it be injuries or whatever, as like la-di-da. Oh, you know, we don't know when Ben Simmons is going to come back, but when does that matter? You know, he's going to scrimmage and whatever's best for Ben is best for us, right? It's all individual. What's best for Kyrie is best for us. Whatever's best for Kevin is best for us as a team. When the most important thing in all sports, this is worn out and true. In the movie The Northman, again, there was a lacrosse-style game where that they played, I guess. It was probably historically accurate in the late 800s. That's how the 9th century.
Old, long time ago. Wow.
And it seemed like those guys had a good team ethic together. They all seemed to care for each other. Team matters in sports. This team has been built around individuals, Brian.
Like, I have to pee so bad.
You go pee. I'm almost hurts. You go pee. I'm almost done. So to the fans, it's like, if you're listening at this point in this pod, God bless you, because you know, you as a Nets fan have had to deal with like all the goofy jokes on Twitter and all that stuff about how the Nets don't have fans. We know that's not true. And it gets to the point where it's like, how, you know, we give our attention to this team, right? You know, and we understand that this team should be very good. And yes, we are appreciative that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving play for this team. How great that is. What a great, fantastic thing. But to instantly expect the fan base to sort of elevate to the level of like what Warriors fans were in the early Steph Clay run when they were winning championships, right? Like those fans at Oracle in Oakland were so elated because, you know, the Warriors have had a long, you know, that franchise has been operating in San Francisco area, I don't know, since 60s, 70s, right? Like early 70s, very long time. those fans have been there for a while. They've had seen some success, and they've seen it go away. But the fans had always been there. But they were able to build sort of that connection between the team and the fan base. Ever since Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have been here, it's been injuries or disappearances by players. It's been guys coming in and then guys leaving. Players that we thought were going to care about, and then they, again, want to leave the franchise. So for you Nets fans, I just don't want you to feel bad. Like, I don't want Nets fans to feel bad that they aren't deemed good enough fans.
Wow.
Because, and you've said this before, and I agree with it, it's like you build sort of a fan base up by winning and by seeing these guys consistently play and seeming to kind of all the players come together in a really big moment like the playoffs. And, you know, what we're seeing is we seem to care more about how Ben Simmons is a scrimmage than how the Nets maybe want to attack the Celtics defense. So that's the show. I'm sorry.
No, you had to get it out. You had to get it out.
The addendum.
We had to do it. All the stuff that I said about where to follow us is still true. I don't need to repeat that.
This was like the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King of podcast. Yeah. One worth it. No.
Great show, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
I'll see everybody. Bye. We're out of here.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.